Welcome to the Junk Refund Show, hosted by Alan J. Cook, founder of 1-800-JUNK-REFUND. Have you ever paid those expensive junk removal companies to take away some of your stuff, only to say to yourself, as a truck drives off down the street, some of that stuff wasn't junk? Did they try to sell it for you and give you some money back? No. Well, now there is a company that can do just that. Listen to our weekly Junk Refund Show on BBS Radio TV to learn how one lady spent $375 on junk removal and got $3,200 back. 1-800-JUNK-REFUND represents the next generation of junk removal. Learn how to not only save your money on junk removal, but how to get some money coming back. Plus, purchase one of our radio vouchers during the show to save even more on your junk removal. Let's get the junk out of your home and out of your life. Now, with your host, Alan J. Cook.
It is my favorite time of the week, as I tell you every week, Thursdays at 3 o'clock Eastern, where I get to get on the radio with BBS Radio TV and do a nationwide live radio show talking about junk removal, how to get the junk out of your living rooms and out of your garages, but also the bigger picture, how to get it out of your life. And I am thrilled today, coming to you from Scottsdale, Arizona, where I am parked in a rented Chevy pickup truck that I'm using to clean out a condo down here. I am parked in the back lot of a Wendy's, which I'm going to hit as soon as we're done with this show, on my way to the Salt River landfill, which is about 10 miles from here, and I am looking due north across the beautiful deserts of Arizona and the Scottsdale area. So that's where I am. I've got my high school buddy, Lindsey Parker, who is on the phone with us, who we're going to talk about what he's doing with his life, because it's just fantastic. And, Lindsey, I just want to make sure you can still hear me okay.
Yeah, hear you great.
Great. Thanks for taking the time to be on the show. Last week on this show, I interviewed Robert Parsons, who is Matt Parsons. Matt's a high school buddy of ours as well. I interviewed Robert, who goes around the world bird watching, or birding as he calls it, and he's seen something like 4,900 different species of birds. And he has a very exciting life going at about the age of 70. We're a few years younger than him, but I've always been impressed with your Facebook posts and the energy that you have about fishing and hunting, but I think mostly fishing, and some of the places that you're going around the world and the stories that you can tell. So before we get to that part of it, I just want to go back to where we kind of met each other back in high school at Orem High School. We graduated in 1976. What did you like most about Orem High School?
Oh, I just loved the friends, the camaraderie, you know, go hang out in the lounge with your buddies and talk about girls and life, and that was number one. Number two, of course, I love basketball, all sports, but basketball in particular. So, yeah.
You played on the varsity team. Tell me more about your basketball career. I remember a great shot that I told you about before. I'll mention it in just a minute. Just tell me more about your basketball experience at Orem High.
Well, I started as a junior, and I played, well, when I was a sophomore, I played the forward, and I was about 6 foot tall as a sophomore, and I was a little undersized, so I practiced real hard that summer, and then I came back in my junior year and started playing the off guard, and I won the starting position, so I started all year as a junior and then as a senior, and it was a lot of fun. I ended up getting All-State, and we took fourth in the state our senior year, and it was a lot of fun. We'd play Provo and Orem were the biggest rivalry you could ever believe, and we'd play in the Marriott Center. And I remember our senior year, there were 13,000 people at the Provo-Orem game, and if you got 13,000 high school kids all screaming down at you, I remember leaving the game, and my head was just spinning. I could hardly hear. Maybe that's why I don't hear well.
That's cool. I still remember, and I mentioned this to you before, I still remember, you're a right-handed ball player, but I remember you driving the left side of the lane one time and putting up at the baseline a left-handed, kind of a left-handed jump shot, which for some reason has always stuck with me, and I thought, dang, that's a lot of talent to be able to do that. Do you remember that shot by chance?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I drove the baseline actually on the right side, dribbling right-handed. When I went up to shoot, I was behind the backboard. So I just put it in my left hand and shot it with my left hand because it was outside the backboard and made it.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
That's good awesome. Times. Yeah, I think that's amazing. Also, speaking of good times in high school, tell everybody how you met your wonderful wife, Vicky, because that also happened in high school, as I remember.
Yeah. Just one other basketball note. My daughter went on to play basketball in Utah, and she was the only 3A girl to ever win Miss Basketball at Wasatch High School. That's the best player in the state for her year, and then she went on to play for BYU. And in her senior year, they played UConn in the Sweet 16, so she was a lot better basketball player than I was. But anyway, that was fun.
good comment.
But in high school, my wife, Vicky, who's the best thing that ever happened to me, that's for sure, she asked me to Sadie Hawkins dance. That was as a sophomore. And, you know, I was actually had my eye on somebody else, but we went and we had a good time. And I remember, you know, you have this fake wedding and we actually kissed over the hay bale. And it's like, all of a sudden, it piqued my interest a little bit more. And then my mother said, any girl that ever asks you out, you've got to return the favor and at least take her out one time. And so I took her out, and my girlfriend that I had at the time, we got in a big fight. And so, okay, Vicky became my girlfriend, and we've never looked back. So that was, what was that, in 1970, and we're married 43 years and got 21 grandkids, and yeah, good times.
That's beautiful stuff. That's beautiful stuff. Tell everybody about what you do professionally for a profession.
Well, that's a pretty good question. I remember my daughter Kelly one time took me to Parents' Day, and, you know, they all got up and said, my dad does this, my dad does this. And Kelly got up there, and she's like, I'm not really sure what my dad does. He's a doctor. He's a financial planner. He's a businessman, on and on. And I got up and I said, yeah, I'm a businessman. So I went to school and became an optometrist, had a big practice in California for about 5 years and sold it. And then I came back to Utah. And because I was big into hunting and fishing, I actually started a network marketing company for hunting and fishing, and we had like 10,000 guys go through our business, and I made millions and then ended up losing millions at it. But so I did that, and then I, in part of the process, I bought a fishing lodge in Alaska. So I've been guiding people in Alaska, hunting and fishing, actually, for since 1995, I think. I still go. And I'm a saltwater fishing guide. I went on a mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints down in Mexico. And so I speak fluent Spanish. So I go to Mexico and take people down there because I've got a lot of great connections in the Spanish world and in Mexico. So I'm down there every February taking guys tarpon fishing. And I'm a landlord. I do a little bit of everything. But the optometry thing, I've actually, I'd kind of retired on it. I sold my practice to a big ophthalmology group in Bakersfield. And before I moved back, But right now, I'm actually, during the winter months, I work a couple of days a week to fund my expensive fishing trips around the world. I just got back from Argentina a couple of months ago. And anyway, so what do? I'm a businessman and hunt and fish and kind of play around a lot.
You should tell, next time somebody asks you that question, you should just tell them what you don't do, and you'll probably save time. I think that's great. Okay. But see, that's the background, folks, just to let you know a little bit about this stud that I'm talking to here. But now let's talk about this unique fishing hobby of yours. Tell everybody how you got started in this fishing adventure that you've been on.
Well, when I was a kid, I just loved hunting and fishing. I loved sports as well, but that was pretty much my life. And I remember my dad, he wouldn't let me have a BB gun until I was 11 because his brother shot somebody's eye out. the old Christmas story.
You hear that all the time, yeah.
But anyway, so when I turned 11, I got a BB gun. I went out that morning on Christmas, and when I came back at noon, my mom's like, "What'd you do?" And I said, "Well, I just killed 20 birds." And she's like, "Oh, no, what have I done?" So I was a big hunter, and then fishing, of course, my dad would take us fishing, and I love fishing as well. And I literally became, what happened is I did it so much, and I loved it so much that people always wanted me to help them. And so it was just natural to become a guide. And so I guided in hunting and fishing bowl. And up until about 10 years ago, maybe 15, the hunting thing has just kind of petered off. And the main reason is hunting has just turned into a rich man's sport. You take a mule deer, a trophy mule deer, and it takes 7 years at least for them to become the best they'll ever be, sometimes even more. And you shoot a deer, it's dead. You know, you can't bring it back. And fishing, on the other hand, I mean, I catch a 13-pound rainbow trout up on the Snake River, I let it go, you know, and it can be caught over and over again. And so because of that, the hunting just really became a rich man's sport. I used to buy a landowner tag down in southern Utah for $2,500. From a rancher. Well, that same tag now sells for $30,000. And so if you don't have a lot of money, you're not going to get a lot of big trophy animals just because it's turned into a rich man's sport. Where fishing, on the other hand, it's a renewable resource. You know, very few fly fishermen, for example, will ever even keep a fish. They just let them all go. So you can catch a trophy fish and let it go, and somebody else is going to catch it later. So I've really gravitated into fishing a lot more than hunting.
That makes a lot of sense. Tell everybody some of the adventures. You just mentioned you got back from Argentina. Some of the adventures that you've had lately with fishing.
Well, 2 years ago, I decided I was going to catch every cutthroat trout in the United States. And so I caught 12 species of cutthroat trout. And they're all native. I went to Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, Utah, Oregon, Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming to catch all of these different cutthroat trout. And it was a blast. And I took my wife with me on a lot of them. We'd camp out and, you know, you'd be clear up in the mountains somewhere. And it was funny. We were in Oregon, and this little trout stream went past these hot springs. And so we went and we camped at the hot springs, and that night we went and hopped in the hot springs, and here come a couple of nude guys walking in and just hopped in the hot springs with us. And my little naive wife was like, "Whoa, I think I'm going back to the tent." But that was really a fun thing. And I'm working on what I call the North American cutthroat, or the North American trout slam, which is 32 species of trout, whether it's cutthroat or whether it's a rainbow trout, a cutthroat trout, or a char. And the most difficult one is going to be in Mexico. There's a Mexican golden trout. And this was actually in part of my mission. There's a city called Culiacan, Mexico, And up in the Sierra Madre Mountains, up above there, is where the Mexican golden trout is. And 70% of all the marijuana in the United States comes out of there. So that'll there probably be my most dangerous adventure yet. I haven't done it yet.
I watched a PBS special last night about the train that was built to go through the Sierra Madre Mountains.
Oh, yeah.
And it was fascinating. And so to hear you talk about that, that kind of piques my interest. Tell me, I'm a guy that's done some basic fishing and stuff. I understand the Provo River, you know, right there where we grew up, is some of the best. It's either the best fly fishing or trout fishing, or maybe both, in the United States. Is that accurate?
Yeah. So the best rivers in the United States, they list them as a blue ribbon fishery, right? And the Provo River is one of those. The Provo River, I guide on it. So when I'm not in Alaska in the fall or Mexico in the winter, I guide on the Provo River. In fact, we're opening a fly shop right here in Heber. It'll open next month. But anyway, it has as many trout per mile as about any fishery there is. And so it's phenomenal fishing. There's a lot of fishermen. You know, when we grew up in Utah, I think there was like 750,000 people is all that lived there. And what is there now? 3 million?
Yeah, so, I think that's right.
So there's just lots of fishermen there. So you have to be really good now, whereas, you know, in the olden days, it wasn't as hard. But not only is the Provo River good, but the Green River in Utah, the Green River in Wyoming, they're as good as any river in the world. And so if you live where we live in Heber City, Utah, you're within 3 miles of the best fishing the world has to offer. And the Provo's one of them.
That's brilliant. That's great stuff. So this radio show, we talk on this show about, you know, junk removal stuff. Like, I'm in Scottsdale doing a job right now, and we go around the United States because people like what we do, and we're a little different because we try to take the good stuff that we get our hands on and we put it up for sale, and if it sells, then the customer gets some money back. So we talk a lot about, you know, kind of cutting-edge, next-generation junk removal kind of stuff. But the fun thing, the funnest part of this is to have people on the show like you who are, I kind of describe it by they either don't have very much junk in their life, or they figured out a way to get rid of it because they're out having such great adventures like you're doing with fishing and like Robert Parsons does with birding. It's a great example of how to live life to the fullest. What advice do you have for people who may not be on any type of adventure that you're on?
Well, my life has been run by goals. I've been a goal setter my entire life, and everything I do is geared around those goals and what I want to achieve in my life. And if you do that, then your life is prioritized and you end up doing the most important things. You know, it's easy to put a lot of junk in your life like you're talking about. And if you don't have goals, then you're just, you know, wandering around aimlessly going, oh, what am I going to do today? Now, every year I have a goal setting class for my kids. And they all come to my place, and we spend a evening just talking about goals and setting goals and whatnot. You know, and I'm crazy at it. I may be overboard. And so not all my kids are big goal people either. So what I tell them is this: if you do nothing else, list the top 10 things you want to get done this year, period. Okay? And then we call it Fast Sunday, you know, the first Sunday of every month, you need to sit down and pull your top 10 goals out and say, how did I do this month? And if you do nothing else, and you get those top 10 things done, you'll have accomplished some really good things, right? Whereas if you never set any goals, it's just kind of like, well, what am I going to do today? Watch the prices ride, or, you know, whatever it is.
Right. That's well said. That's well said. We're going to take a break, Lindsay, for about a minute, and then when we come back, we're going to do a little commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about your adventures up in Alaska and what you do up there. So,
sure.
Folks, hang tight. This is really fun. We're talking with my high school buddy, Lindsay Parker, who is on an adventure in a number of different ways, but specifically fishing with goals that he's set to catch various fish around the world, and he's doing it, and it's a really fun thing to watch. So you're listening to the Junk Refund Show. We'll be back with you in about a minute, and we'll talk more Lindsay Parker fishing in Alaska adventures. See you back here in a minute.
Have you ever hired one of those expensive junk removal companies, then wondered what they did with the stuff? Especially the good stuff. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we junk the junk. Recycle stuff like metal and wire. Donate items and get you receipts. And put up for sale the good stuff. And if it sells, you get some money back. Cynthia paid $375 for junk removal and got $3,200 back. Would you like to know how she did it? Tune in to the Junk Refund Show with your host, Alan J. Cook, every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time to get the junk not only out of your home, but also out of your life.
Hey, welcome back to the Junk Refund Show. This is Alan Cook coming to you from Scottsdale, Arizona, where I'm here. I came out here Monday night. I got to do a shout-out to Frontier Airlines because I bought their Go Wild Pass, and I flew out here Monday night for $25, and I'm flying back tonight, getting back tomorrow morning back in Washington, D.C., and the flight back is $31. So it's going to cost me, what's that, $56 round trip, something like that, to fly out to Phoenix. So there's a shout out for the Go Wild Pass. If you know, are on airplanes and you're traveling around the country, these guys can do it for you, and it's a terrific way to travel. Costs about $600 for a yearly pass. I think I saved $2,400 in the first 30 days of having the pass, and then I've been using it for 11 more months. So anyway, that's what I'm doing in Scottsdale. So, Lindsay, tell everybody about your lodge up in Alaska and what you do up there. I think you said every fall or summer that you're up there. Tell people more about that.
Well, one time I had three fishing boats up in Alaska, and we'd take over 200 fishermen out a year. But I'm a little older, Alan and I. I'm 66 now. How old are you, Alan?
65.
Yeah, so anyway, we've geared down quite a bit. So right now, I'm the boat captain. We've got a lodge, and we take out guys for about 6 weeks out of the year. We used to be a lot bigger, but, you know, it's the best fishing in the world, bar none. We fish for halibut in the ocean. You know, you can catch 300-400-pound halibut, and then we go up the rivers, and we fish for salmon, and there's all five species of salmon, cutthroat trout. In the spring, there's steelhead. And anyway, I'm a fisherman. That's what I do. And this is the best fishing in Alaska, period. You know, and the beauty of it, you know, it's southeast Alaska, so it's a lot like Seattle, maybe. You know, a lot of trees, deciduous rainforest. But, you know, we only see black bear, no brown bear, so you don't have to worry about bears much. But we see bear, moose, deer. We'll see 30 humpback whales a day in the ocean. You know, people come all the time, and they're not necessarily big fishermen, but they just love the beauty of it all and the adventure. And, you know, they'll take home 50 pounds worth of halibut and salmon with them as well. So anyway, it's a great time.
If somebody, just in listening to you describe it, somebody says, dang, I want to do that, how do they get a hold of you, or where do they go to get more information on how to make this a reality?
Well, if you got a pencil, you can write my phone number down, which is 801-318-5645. A lot of times I don't answer the phone. Just text me and just say, hey, this is Alan Cook. I listen to your podcast. I'm interested in going to Alaska. Or I'm interested in joining the Fly Fish Club. Or I'm interested in whatever it is that we've talked about. And then I can get back with you. Now, you can go to the flyfishclub@gmail.com, the Heber Fly Shop at gmail.com, or the Phoenix Lodge 44 at gmail.com, or just go to Lindsay Parker on my Instagram page, any of those, or my Facebook page. So, yeah, you can get a hold of me one way or another, and we do a lot of fun stuff.
That's awesome. What's the biggest fish you've ever caught?
Well, I sent you up a picture of a 8-foot sturgeon that I caught last year up on the Salmon River in Idaho. In fact, yes. I went with Kirk Winward, another buddy of ours from high school. Monster. I mean, this 8-foot fish comes blowing out of the water, you know, 100 feet from the boat, and I just about died. And I've seen about everything when it comes to fishing, and it was just spectacular. So that's the biggest fish I've ever caught. I had a 600-plus-pound marlin on that I fought for over an hour, had it about 20 feet from the boat, and actually got off.
That one's got to kill you. That probably takes. That's the story of, you know, the fish that got away. That's probably as dramatic a story. Fighting it for an hour. It's what, 20 feet away from the boat, and it gets off.
Yeah. So when you get into what they call the monofilament line, there's only 100 feet of it, and I was well into the monofilament. The fish was right there, and then just, you know, a couple of big head shakes, and it pops the hook out, and I'm dripping wet from fighting it for an hour. But hey, that's part of fishing, right?
That is part of. Where were you when you did that adventure?
I was off the Baja in Mexico. That was part of my mission, was the Baja, and yes. I was down there in a big boat out there fishing for marlin, and we caught tuna and rooster fish and Dorado and everything else. But yeah, that was the big one that got away.
So you had, did you say 600 pounds? Is that what you said?
Yeah, it was giant. Yeah, it was bigger than me. It was
wow. Amazing.
Well,
it's like three of you. I mean, you know, three
exactly.
of us basically, right?
Yeah, and you're in one of those, chairs, and you're tied in, you know, and you're just horsing it and rocking back and forth for an hour plus just to work it in. Yeah, it was amazing.
Is that the most adventurous fishing trip you've ever been on, or is it some of these trips up in Alaska, or is it the one in, was it Argentina that you just went on? Is there one that just stands out as your most adventurous trip you've ever done?
Well, when you're talking about adventure, you know, you can talk about danger, or, you know, you're out in the middle of nowhere. There's a lot of different things that go on that way. I mean, I was hunting caribou on Adak Island, which is, if you go on the Aleutian Chain, it's the furthest point west in the United States. You're closer to Russia than you are to even Alaska, to Anchorage. And I was out there hunting caribou. I'd take caribou hunters out there. I took 50 caribou hunters out there a year for 3 years. And anyway, in between the trips, I'd go out on my own, and I'd kill this gigantic caribou, and I was 10 miles from the truck, and I had 100 pounds of meat and horns on my back, and I'm hiking down. I mean, this hill was so steep, I could actually just reach out and touch the hillside, you know, and I'm hiking down this hill, and I'm just praying, Lord, do not let me fall, because if I fall, I'm dead, and nobody will ever find my body.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and I actually got halfway back before I was totally exhausted at 3 in the morning. So I just dropped my pack and hiked back to the truck, and then came back the next day and got it. But I survived that one. But just adventure-wise, I just got back from Argentina fishing for a golden Dorado in the Paraná River. and the Paraná is three times as big as the Mississippi, and these are giant. Dorado is just a separate species, and I think the biggest one I caught was like 12 pounds. They do catch him 30 and 40 pounds, but it was amazing just, you know, being out there in the middle of nowhere, and went to the Ibotta wetlands and fished for a few days. And then I've been down to Patagonia three times. I took red stag hunters down there 50 a year for 3 years. And while I was down there, I would go fish in Patagonia and a lot of the rivers down there as well. So, yeah, I've been kind of all over the place fishing and hunting and living the dream.
Do you by chance have, I guess you would have this on, you know, Facebook posts or maybe your Instagram or whatever, but this is such an amazing story. And I think, if I remember right, you sent me a photo of a book that you wrote about mule deer hunting. Isn't that right? I was going to ask you, have you got a book in mind of all these fishing adventures or et cetera?
Yeah, so we have a club right now. We call it the Fly Fish Club, and we teach people how to fly fish. And the beginning part of that, I've written a book called Fly Fishing 101. It's about 75 pages long. And so when a guy joins, they actually read this book to give them the basics on fly fishing. And then we have a call for the members every Tuesday night for an hour. And we'll take one section of the book. And what we do, fly fishing, for example, is just so, everybody wants to do it, and it's so incredible. But it's, you got to be able to do five things right at the same time, or you won't catch any fish. It's not simple, right? It's a lot of training goes into it. And you can learn anything on the internet. You can go to YouTube and find out anything you ever wanted to know about fly fishing, but it's like, you know, trying to drink out of a water hose. It's just massive information overload. So Fly Fishing Made Simple with the Fly Fish Club is basically saying, do this, do this, do this in this order, and if you do that, you'll learn the basics. And then we have a mentor program where they can call and say, hey, I'm on the Green River right now, I'm not catching any fish, what do I need to do different? And anyway, that book right now, when I get done, it'll probably be more about 150 pages long, and we'll publish that when it's done. But I'm in the process of that right now, all of it. So, yeah, that'll happen.
Tell everybody more about the Fly Fish Club, because didn't you just do an exhibit booth like yesterday or the day before about this?
Yeah, so we've been putting this club together for over a year, and we just we had a booth at the Wasatch Fly Fishing and Fly Tying Expo last month, and we rolled the club out then. And like I said, we just barely got started. We got about 20 guys that are in, and if anybody, you know, if you're one of the first 50 guys that join the club, it costs $25 a month, which is nothing. I mean, when I guide somebody on the Provo River for a half a day, it's $300. If I guide them for a full day, it's $500. So you're paying $25 times 12. That's $300 for your first year. That's like a half, you know, what I'd pay, you know, someone would pay for a half day on the river. So, I mean, what you're getting and what you're learning for that is unbelievable, right? But yeah, we normally have a $100 sign-up fee, and then they pay $25 a month. And if they want to be part of the mentor program, then they pay an extra $25. But the first 50 guys that join, we're actually waiving the sign-up fee, and we're including the mentor program for a year for free. So basically for $300, those first 50 guys are going to have access to me and call me every day if they want. George Snell, I don't know if you remember Gene Snell, his brother and I.
I do remember Gene Snell, yes.
Yeah, George, his brother, is one of the best fishermen in the world, bar none. And we fish at least probably once a week together, and he's one of our pro staff, you know, so we've got other guys as well. So, you know, if a person has a question about different types of fly fishing, the mentoring program, they can ask and whatnot. So anyway, I mean, my goal is this. I just want to, I love to teach people, okay, because I've been a guide my whole life. And so it's teaching people how to make this beautiful thing of fly fishing simple and how to become good at it. When they get through our program, through all six modules, they become what we say we call a master angler. And at that point, you should be able to travel anywhere and catch trout anywhere, anytime, because you've learned how to do it. And so, anyway, that's what we do. And, you know, it's about the camaraderie. When I had the old hunting biz business, the network marketing thing I was telling you about, some of my best friends to this day came through that program. And so we had 10,000 guys come through that program. So we're doing kind of the same thing with fishing now and just making it a lot of fun. We have what we call slams. So like right now we have what we call the basic trout slam. So all the members, whoever catches a brook trout, a rainbow trout, a brown trout, and a cutthroat trout, they win the competition because they did it first. And then we measure the girth and the length, and whoever catches the biggest overall size wins another prize. And then just anybody who completes it in 3 months gets this big, this nice, beautiful certificate saying they completed the slam. So we do fun things. We teach them. They get 10% off all their gear that they buy. So anyway, that's the club.
Now, if somebody wants to join the club, do they call you? Do they go to a website? What do they do?
Yeah, just go to theflyfishclub.com.
Okay.
And it's fly fish, not fly fishing. We couldn't get that, what do they call it?
Trademark name or something?
No, it's not the trademark, just on your website.
That the URL. You couldn't get the,
If you type that in, it's some guy.
The domain name.
The domain, that's it. So the domain of Fly Fishing Club is a guy who's selling cryptocurrency and whatnot. But the, so we ended up with the Fly Fish Club. So anyway, flyfishclub@gmail.com is the email address, or theflyfishclub.com for our website.
Tell me, you're talking to a rookie fisherman. I actually, the best fishing story I have, I went down to Mazatlan, Mexico a couple of years after I was married on a family trip, and I caught a marlin. I went deep sea fishing with some brothers-in-law, and we went out on this boat, and they trolled these massive hooks with colored plastic streamers on them, and we pulled, you can tell I don't know the terminology, but we pulled those lures past a small group of marlin, and immediately, as soon as those lures passed the marlin, those, I'm going to call them those fins of the marlin, disappeared under the water, and we hooked four of them in about what seemed like just a couple of minutes. Mine was small, took me 45 minutes. Mine was about 6.5 feet long, maybe, and the others were like 7 to 8 feet long, and mine was the skinniest, but that's the greatest thing I've done. I've never been fly fishing. I have good friends who do this, yourself, Brian Wimmer, some others that have done this on the Provo River that are guides. But there's something magical about fly fishing. Can you, and I know you could talk for an hour about it, can you give me like a minute and a half on what it is about fly fishing that just gets in people's blood and they just love to keep doing it?
Well, probably one comparison is when you hunt, you can take your gun, go out to the range, sight it in at 200 yards, right? And walk out in the mountains and sit down on a rock, and if a deer comes out, and if it's just within a couple hundred yards, you just put it in the scope and boom, you kill it, right? Yep. If you want a bow hunt, that ain't going to happen. You have to learn how the bow is, to adjust the bow correctly. The right arrows have to go through it. You have to aim. You have to hold your breath. You have to do all the things right. Then you have to be good enough to sneak within 50 yards of the deer to kill it. And it's like fly fishing's the same way. Is, you know, anybody can throw a worm on a hook and huck it out in the river and probably catch a fish. But to catch one on a fly, I mean, a fly, especially if you tie it yourself, there's just, it's the coolest thing. You know, you take these this fur and these feathers, and you put it on a hook, and you cast it out there, and you fake this cool fish, and it comes up, and you see it eat your fly, and you bring it in, you know. But to be able to do it, like I said, you got to be able to do five things right at the same time. It's really an art. It's just not, you know, Joe Sixpack and a can of worms. You know, I was on the internet the other day. You could buy this strap that hooked your fly rod, so you could sit in a chair and you just hook your spinning rod onto your leg and, you know, sit down and drink a beer. It's not like that. You're out in the river, you know, you learn where the fish are, why they're there, which fly are they going to eat. Then you got to be able to cast it right. Fish comes up and eats it, and you catch it, and you need to let it go. It's just, you know, it's just magic. It's kind of like golf, other than it can be as frustrating as golf. But when you go out golfing, you're in this beautiful place, right? And that's right. Why I loved golfing. I quit golfing because it's like, well, I can't do golfing and fish and balls, so I quit golfing. But you're in this beautiful river, and these beautiful mountains are in this beautiful ocean, and just the most beautiful place in the world. And, you know, you're trying to trick these fish into eating a piece of art that you made on your fly rig, you know. So anyway, yeah.
It just sounds more challenging and more of an adventure, right?
It is, for sure. Yep. And there's a lot of aspects to it. It's not just one thing, you know. You can, what they call nymph fishing, where you fish under the water, dry fly fishing on the surface, streamer fishing, where looks like a little fish and you're stripping it through the water. You go out on lakes like Strawberry Reservoir and you can fly fish that way. You go into the ocean and you're catching 200-pound tarpon that are bigger than you. You know, there's just so many aspects of fly fishing.
I think that's fabulous. Well, we're going to take one more break real quick. And, Lindsay, if you still got a few minutes, I'd love to keep talking to you about these adventures and I'd love to learn more about some of the things that are on the horizon now. Like, what are you going to do next and some of the fun things you got going? But this is really fun to kind of get inside your world. This is your host, Alan Cook, on the Junk Refund Show. I'm talking to my high school buddy, Lindsay Parker, who is on a world-class adventure as a fisherman and a hunter, but mostly as a fisherman, with all kinds of stories to tell you. And I'm here to tell you his stories are legit and they're true, okay? So this is really fun to hear about this. We'll take a break real quick. We'll be back with one of the best fishermen in the world. I'm just going to dub you that, Lindsay. I think you are one of the best fishermen in the world. And we'll be back in a minute. You're listening to Junk Refund Show. Don, are you there? All right, so
Have you ever hired one of those expensive junk removal companies, then wondered what they did with the stuff? Especially the good stuff. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we junk the junk. Recycle stuff like metal and wire. Donate items and get you receipts. And put up for sale the good stuff. And if it sells, you get some money back. Cynthia paid $375 for junk removal and got $3,200 back. Would you like to know how she did it? Tune in to the Junk Refund Show with your host, Alan J. Cook, every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, to get the junk not only out of your home, but also out of your life.
Hey, welcome back to the Junk Refund Show. We're having a lot of fun. I'm your host, Alan Cook. I'm sitting in a rented pickup truck taking a break from a junk removal job I'm doing in Scottsdale, Arizona. In fact, you might want to Google Fountain Hills, Arizona, just to see the fountain. They have they have a fountain out here in the, you know, in the middle of this miniature lake that is surrounded by a very nice golf course. They've got a fountain that shoots water straight up, I'm going to guess 75 feet, maybe more than that, and it is a spectacular thing to watch. And you might want to just Google Fountain Hills, Arizona, just to look at the fountain. They light it up at night. It's really beautiful, and whoever came up with that idea is a brilliant, you know, city planner, because it puts their city on the map. I just think it's really cool. So, Lindsay, I heard years ago that Tiger Woods would come out and go fly fishing on the Provo River and that he enjoyed doing that. And that makes me curious, with all the guiding that you've done, all the tours that you've done up in Alaska, all the fishing trips are you taking people on, have you taken some famous people out with you, and who are some of the people that you may have met?
Not really. I got one good story about hunting. So George Strait wanted to go mule deer hunting, and Dennis Winch, who in my opinion is the greatest mule deer hunter that ever lived, he's not alive, he's one of my best friends, but that's who I wrote the book with. And I guided with him down in the desert of southern Utah, and George Strait wanted to come fishing or come hunting, you know, with Dennis, and of course I was helping him. And so he sent his manager or whoever it was out, and he got with Dennis, and he's talking to us, and he's like trying to Jew us down. And Dennis is like, no, it's $5,000 for 5 days, take it or leave it. The guy's like, well, this is George Strait, just think what, you know, they could do for you and blah blah blah. And he's like, nah. So anyway, he didn't end up coming.
Trying to knock your price down, right?
Well, yeah. So George calls up, you know, a couple months later. It's like, hey, you know, we're getting close to the hunt, or things coming. How are things coming along? He's like, well, you're not going with us. It's like, what are you talking about? Well, your manager came, was trying to Jew us down, and I just told him, hey, first come, first serve. And he's like, are you kidding me? You know, so here's George making millions and worried about $1,000 or something. So that's my best famous story.
There you go. That's all right. What are some of the places you're targeting to go next, and for what kind of fish?
Well, New Zealand's high on my list. I've always wanted to go there. In fact, that's where I wanted to go on my mission. Of course, I ended up in hot Mexico. But it's got some of the greatest brown trout fishing in the world. Iceland, same thing. Catching some Arctic char above the Arctic Circle. Northern Ontario for big brook trout. Back to Patagonia. In the southern Patagonia, they have sea-run German brown down in the Tierra del Fuego on the tip of Arizona or Argentina. South America, and to the Seychelles and Eastern Africa for GT tiger fish down in South Africa. Next year I'm going to the Amazon to fish for peacock bass. I just keep doing it until I die. So there's lots of places, lots of fish, so I just keep checking them off my goal list, right?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Do you? I think you answered this question earlier. Like, when you caught the sturgeon, I assume you just turned it loose and turned it back into the Snake River and whatever.
Yep.
But do you ever mount any of these and bring them home and put them on your wall, anything like that?
Well, The Boulder Mountains in southern Utah have some of the greatest high mountain lake fishing in the world, and I fish down there a lot. In fact, my partner, Larry Clarkson, lives in Kanab, and he and I are putting together a cabin in the city of Boulder right now, so we've got closer access to that. But I caught some gigantic brook trout in there about 30 years ago, and I took them in to get them mounted. And when you mount a fish, they have what they call a skin mount. So they peel the skin off, and then they mount it on a foam form. And the head, they can't use the head because there's too much grease and that in there, so the head's fake. And I remember going in to the taxidermist just before it was done, and these brook trout are the most beautiful fish in the world, and the colors were just totally washed out and totally faded. And when he actually brought an artist in, and with an airbrush, he actually painted the spots and everything back on it. So it was beautiful when it was done. But the point was, it wasn't the real skin mount anyway. So what I do now is I never kill any of the fish. I just take the girth and the length measurement and several pictures of it, and then you can just get a fiberglass mold that's the same size as your fish and airbrush it, and it'll look just like the fish you had. And you don't have to kill a fish to do it. So yeah, that's how I do it now.
Mm-hmm. There you go. I have heard from some of our classmates, I think Kyle Rollins may have been the guy that told me about this, about Kirk Winward's trophy room at his house or something, for all the hunting that he's done and the mounts that he has at his home. Have you been there to see that? Do you know if that's an accurate statement?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so Kirk's one of my best friends. We hunted a lot back in the day, and then he got so filthy rich as a retinal surgeon that he got out of my league and, went on to, he'd be a good one to interview. He got stuck hunting moose in Russia, and they were going to put him in jail, and they rented a helicopter from South Korea to come pick him up and take him out of there. So, but
there you go. That's next week's show right there, buddy.
Yeah.
Hey, good for you.
See, he has what's called the Super Slam, and that's all 27 North American game animals, including the polar bear. And there's probably only 100 guys in the world that have done it. But I've been working on Kirk a lot. I'm getting him into fly fishing. It's like, I think he's killed 13 or 16 Cape buffalo, and he goes to Africa every year. It's like, Kirk, okay, time to get into fishing and start catching all the fish instead of, once you've killed all the animals, you don't need to keep killing them. Anyway, yeah, that's definitely, he's one of the biggest hunters in the world, period, bar none. Kirk is, he goes on guided trips pretty much, and, if you got the money, why not? But, yeah, he'd have some great stories to tell you. But he's getting into fly fishing. He's been with me to Mexico the last 2 years fishing for tarpon. We've been out on the Green River a couple of times. He's getting into fly fishing for sure.
So when I talked with Robert Parsons last week and all the species of birds that he's seen around the world, I asked him a question that I want to ask you, which is kind of simple, which is basically, what's the most important thing that this fishing hobby of yours has done for you personally?
Well, I'm kind of a weird guy, right? I got off my mission. I worked for Kmart for, I think, 3 weeks. It's like, I'm done. And from that day on, I've been self-employed. I've had my own businesses. And I've basically done it because I don't want anybody telling me I can't go hunting or I can't go fishing, right? And literally, I've lived my life exactly how I've wanted it my whole life. And nobody's told me what to do. I just do what I want. People come up to me, oh, my gosh, you live the dream. I say, I wish I could do what you do. I just put my hand on their shoulder and say, I wish I could too. but you have to pay the price, Do you want a $3 million house and a $2 million motorhome and a $300,000 motorhome and a $100,000 boat, and never do anything with it hardly? Or do you want to live in a smaller house and an older truck and go hunting every day or fishing every day or doing what you want to do? So it's all a matter of priority. You know, people say, well, you know, it costs a lot of money to go to Mexico fishing with you, $3,000. Yeah. Okay. Well, I just paid $10,000 to go to Argentina, you know, but it's just what you want to do. And so you have to set your goals up and set your priorities and say, you know, where's my money going to go? And, you know, once you're dead, your big house and boat and stuff are gone. It's all about your relationships and your memories. That's the only thing you're taking with you when you leave this world.
Right. I am all over that. That's exactly what the way that I look at it as well. And I think you're really smart to do what you've been doing and just continuing to do it the way that you're doing it. I just think it's fabulous. I got to tell you also, folks, he's got, you know, we can sit here and talk hunting and fishing all day long, but I'm also talking to a guy who's got a really strong spiritual side to him. And every once in a while on his posts, his Facebook posts, he'll quote some scripture or he'll mention something about God or church or something that kind of helps kind of rivet him in the direction that he wants to go. Where you know, as a mentor going on fishing trips, you guide people. I've never done this, of course, but based on what you said, Lindsay, you basically are guiding them on an adventure to help them achieve whatever it is they want to achieve. Lindsay is a guy who uses God the same way to help guide him in his life, you know, as, I don't know, the ultimate fisherman. Maybe I could say it that way. But he's got that other side to him as well. We haven't really talked about it here, but you'll sense that when you, you know, follow him on Instagram or you give him a call to go to Mexico to go fishing with him or Alaska or whatever it might be. You'll get a sense that you're with not only a really professional, you know, hunter and fisherman here and just a great guy, but you got a guy who is tied into God really well too. And I'm just saying that, Lindsay, as a compliment to you, because I've seen that in some of your posts and it stood out in a really positive way. And I just thought that was a terrific thing for you to do, and that caught my attention as well. So I'm just basically congratulating you on that side of your life as well. So we've got like 2 minutes left, Lindsay. This has been a lot of fun talking to you about this. Is there anything else you want to talk about that we haven't discussed already on the show?
Yeah, and you led right into it. Everything that I have in this world, in my life, I give credit to God. And let me give you an example. Almost every time I go on some big adventure, I get this foreboding feeling. It's like, oh, is God or the Spirit telling me I shouldn't do this thing? And I fight through it, and I go anyway. In my mind, it's Satan, it's the devil, trying to put me down and not do the things that I was meant to do and should do. And I give all the credit to God, saying, yeah, he helps me fight through it, and I do what I do. And when you're out on a hill in Adak Island in the middle of heck and nowhere, and you got a 100-pound pack on your back, you know, I can call on God and say, God, help me, please. Don't let me fall and break my leg, or Vicky will never find me. Or, you know, you're in a boat. I've been in the boat where, you know, there's 20-foot waves, and you think the boat's going to sink, and it's like, God, help me. And the miracles that he has blessed me with in my life and actually saved my life many times. And I tell people, look, you know, if you're just sitting home, you know, watching TV, getting pizza brought in, going golfing, you know, doing this and that and the other thing, and you never do any great adventure, you may never have a lot of need to call on God. But, you know, if you're up in the Winnemucca wilderness hunting elk at 13,000 feet and you're lost and you've been in a snowstorm for a full day and you're hypothermic, and I prayed to God, I said, God, I'm in big trouble. Help me. How do I get out of here? And the clouds lift, the sun comes out, and I'm 180 degrees turned in the wrong direction, okay, because it was overcast and whatnot. I turn around, there's my brother 3 miles away, decided to walk out on this peak, and I see him, and I make it back before I die. And God will do that for you. But if you're never doing anything, you know, my favorite quote of all is from Helen Keller. It's, life is a great adventure or nothing at all. So if all you're doing is sitting around vegetating, you know, you don't need God so much maybe, but I think God will help you in the very... I have a blessing given to me, and it said, God will bless you in the very hour that you need it. And I can't tell you how many times in my life out on these great adventures that I've had to pray and say, God, help me or I'm dead. And in that very hour, he'll bless me. And so going back to what you said, I mean, my life is all a credit to God, for my family, for my kids, for my grandkids. I got 21 of them, by the way. And it's all a credit to God. And, you know, go out there and do great things. Set big goals. And if nothing else, set 10 new goals this year and go out and achieve them. And, you know, your life will change.
That's well said. And I got to tell you, folks, in just kind of, and I do this as a standard procedure, just kind of prepping Lindsay for what we were going to talk about today. I sent him a text message this morning, had 19 different questions on there. None of them had anything to do with God or spiritual stuff at all. But as I was kind of wrapping this up, I thought about some of the stuff he's written and some of the spiritual stuff that he's written, and he deserves credit, Lindsay and God, but they both deserve credit for that side of their life. And you just heard how much it means to Lindsay, and I think that's fabulous. So, Lindsay, this has been a delight. It's been really fun to just talk to you about what you're doing. Say hi to Vicky for me. Say hi to Kirk for me the next time you see him.
And, all right.
And again, it's just been great to have you on the show and just reconnect with you. And I'm not one to give advice to a lot of people, but if I were to give you any advice, I would say don't change a darn thing.
Yeah, I'm to the point now where my life is designed on trying to keep my body in good enough shape so I can keep doing stuff. Because when you start getting our age, you start falling apart.
Thanks, well, Alan. You are terrific. Keep it up. It's been great talking to you. And I look forward to chatting with you again. And God bless you in everything you're doing. Keep going.
Okay. Thanks.
All right, buddy. Thanks for
being on the show. Bye,
everybody. All right. Thanks. Thanks to Dawn and to BBS Radio. Dawn, our producer, and does a great job. You've been listening to the Junk Refund Show with my guest, Lindsay Parker. And if you can't get fired up to go out on an adventure and set 10 goals for yourself this year by listening to Lindsay, then you probably can't get fired up to go out on an adventure and set 10 goals for yourself. He's got as many great stories as anybody. I love listening to him. Thanks again, Lindsay. And God bless all of you. Go make your life an adventure. Because that's why we're on the planet, and Lindsay is a perfect example of making that happen. Talk to you soon. See you next week on the Junk Refund Show. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Junk Refund Show, the longest-running junk removal radio show on the air. Join us next week as we discuss innovative ways to declutter your home, your business, and your life using 20 years of junk removal experience. Find out why we give out free ice cream gift cards to our clients, too. In upcoming shows, we will explore how to get the junk out of your relationships, your spiritual life, your waistline, even your travel life. Plus, call in with questions and situations you would like some help with. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we are committed to bringing the next generation of junk removal, because not all junk is junk. See you next week on the Junk Refund Show, every Thursday afternoons at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on BBS Radio TV.